The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donald standing in for Greg. He's on his way back after a very successful weekend in London with the team over there. A great broadcast yesterday, if you heard it. If you didn't, you can listen back, of course, on our website and our YouTube channel. Really good show there in London from Greg and the team. Now, it is Monday. It is the 4th of September. And one thing that was very noticeable driving up this morning, actually, is the amount of extra traffic on the road, because the schools are now well and truly back. They were going back in dribs and drabs all through last week, but the buses are out there, the traffic is out there, so please, just be aware of that on the roads this morning. Allow a bit of extra time, be a little bit more patient than usual, and especially around Letterkenny, we've been having some roadworks, and there will be more coming up. I'll mention that in a moment. But, you know, it has been a fairly busy morning so far, and there have been way too many stories about roads on the airwaves here and elsewhere for the wrong reasons, and let's not add to that. A lot coming up on the show this morning, but of course, as we always say, the most important thing is your perspectives, your views, your take on the stories and issues of the day. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000, call us 074 91 25000. Caroline producing and taking your calls this morning. Caroline on her own, because Niamh was over in London and is on her way back this morning along with the team. So be a little bit more patient if the phone isn't answered as quickly as it normally would be. Please just be a little bit more patient. It will be answered, and you will get the attention that you need and deserve. Of that, you can be absolutely sure. We're on social media as well, of course. We're Highland Hub on X, or Twitter, as we used to call it. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. We're at Highland Radio on X or Twitter. And we're on other social media channels as well. Comments at highlandradio.com if you wish to send us an email. Looking at the papers in this morning's Donegal News, major recruitment drive at LUH. Emma Ryan writes that over 80 healthcare posts are to be filled at the hospital to improve safe staffing levels. A major new recruitment drive is underway under the National Initiative for Implementation of Framework for Safe Nurse Staffing and Skill Mix. The hospital has received approval for a total of 78 new posts, 55 in nursing and 23 in healthcare assistants. Also looking for more candidate advanced nurse practitioners in cardiology, emergency, rapid access, diabetic nursing, respiratory nursing, ED, children's IBD and dermatology access to care. Still to say, 70 new nurses have already been recruited at the hospital to date this year. And that can only be good. And we just hope that we don't have the problems that we've had with recruitment in the past, where we know the posts have been advertised and they've been advertised again and again and again. And sometimes it can be difficult to get the actual people that they're looking for. And hopefully they're in a position to offer the sort of packages that will attract people to the area and to the region. Derry News this morning. Council urged to rethink half marathon decision. A Waterside half marathon winner, Kyle Doherty, has renewed calls for a rethink on the decision to cancel next year's event, insisting that nothing comes close to promoting the city as much as the half marathon. The council revealed that as a cost-cutting exercise, half marathon events will be alternated between Derry and Strabane over the coming years. Over 2,000 runners took part in the event yesterday, with hundreds more turned away. But despite its popularity, the Waterside Half will not take place, we're told, in 2024. And a lot of pushback on that particular issue. Looking at the Irish Independent this morning, their main story: urban-rural divide revealed in our most overcrowded classes. The Independent writes that schoolchildren in parts of rural Ireland were twice as likely to be placed in overcrowded classes at primary level last year compared with pupils attending national schools in Dublin. An analysis of class sizes in more than 3,000 primary schools across the country by the paper reveals wide variations. Nationally, 11.4% of children were being taught in primary school classes of more than 30. So nationally, the figure is 11.4. So where do you think Donegal comes in the particular league table associated with that? Well, I can tell you, Donegal is the third highest in the country in terms of overcrowded classes. The national average is, we said, 11.4% of children in classes of over 30. In Donegal, it's 16.4%. 17.5% in classes over 30. Only two counties higher, Monaghan 17.2% and Leitrim 18.6%. So Donegal the third highest, and there's a lot more on that in the Irish Independent this morning. Quite a lot online as well, actually, including graphs featuring all 3,000 plus primary schools going. So you'll get quite a lot from the Independent on that particular story. And obviously, with all the schools back, it's education and associated issues are very much on the news this morning. Irish Times this morning, inside, a lot on the electric picnic, highs and lows of the weekend festival. Billie Eilish speaks to a generation in crisis. That's all inside the paper. Sharp fall in private pensions for those in their 40s and 50s. The number of people in their mid-40s and 50s with a private pension has fallen significantly since last year, with the cost of living crisis putting future planning out of reach for many. That's according to research from the state's Consumer Watchdog. A Competition and Consumer Protection Commission survey published today highlights what it's describing as concerning gaps in retirement planning. And that is indeed an issue of concern. Also on the Times this morning, Kinahan cartel franchises drug operation, cartel assisting Irish gangs in exchange for percentage of major drug deal. Latest move by cartel to invent itself in Ireland after a crackdown outlined by Gardaí. And we were speaking earlier about the Waterside Half Marathon. Well, there was the Dingle Full and Half Marathons took place yesterday in County Kerry. Lovely picture on the front of the Times as the participants run over a bridge as they headed out toward Ballyferriter via Slayhead to Dunqueen and then back into Dingle. And that's on the Irish Times. Irish Daily Mail this morning. New plan to get more of us living apartment life. State to become a major player in building homes. €20,000 tax-free plan for rental rooms. Bid to beat institutional investors. And I was actually in Dublin the weekend before last, the 25th, 26th and 27th. I was in Dublin that weekend and I was in a B&B, and the lady running the B&B, who is by coincidence married to a Donegal man, told me that there was a place in Dunleary now, quite close to where I was attending an event. And in this place in Dunleary, it's called Niche Living. And what you have are tiny ensuite bedrooms where people are living in these tiny ensuite bedrooms and they're sharing kitchens. And there's maybe one kitchen for every, whatever it is, five, six, seven bedrooms. So people are sharing the kitchen. They're sharing, oh, I beg your pardon. Oops. Yeah, get rid of that. They're sharing they're sharing the kitchens, they're sharing the living rooms, and then they have these tiny bedrooms which are en suite, and they are paying, she reckons, somewhere between €1,500 and €2,000 a month for that. So they're paying in excess of €1,500, and they don't even get their own kitchen. It just seemed crazy. But this is where they're looking. And we heard previous housing ministers actually speak about this in the past, that they were looking to go more into apartments and go more into these kind of smaller areas. And also Roy Keane headbutted in stadium at Arsenal match. That's an interesting one. More about that in the Daily Mail. Now let's move to the tabloids. The Irish Sun this morning. And a lot about John Gillingham in the news. Now, you'll be aware, I'm sure you'll have seen coverage over the weekend, of the fact that Virgin Media are to broadcast a documentary on the life of John Gillingham, which includes an interview with Gillingham himself, and a lot of pushback and a lot of concern about that, not least from Jimmy Geeran, Veronica Geeran's sister, because Gillingham, whereas he was not convicted of involvement with the murder of Veronica Geeran, he was convicted on drugs charges, and the judge did say at that trial that they were very seriously concerned about Gillingham and his role in the Veronica Geeran murder. So whereas he has not been convicted of anything, he has, shall we say, been associated with it in the minds of people for a very, very long time. So the Irish Sun headline this morning, pint-sized thug faces 8 years. Gillingham in copycat Veronica gun trial. John Gillingham goes on trial today after cops found a gun they mistakenly believed was used to kill reporter Veronica Geeran buried in his yard. The mobster also faces drugs and gang charges in Spain and could be locked up for more than 8 years. And that's at the front of the Irish Sun this morning. Irish Daily Star. Crime bosses close bond. Mobster John Gillingham says he's glad the person who killed his criminal ally Martin Cahill got away with it. The general got what was coming to him, according to Gillingham. General had it coming is the headline on the Irish Daily Star this morning. Cahill was a good guy, he said, but I'm glad his killers weren't caught. That is good. And the inevitable Irish Daily Star pun on the front page after yesterday's soccer. United pay the rice. And that's soccer coverage there. Reference back to Declan Rice scored in that game in the Emirates yesterday. Also on the Irish Daily Mirror, Gilligan exclusive, they say. I'm glad they didn't catch the General's killer, and that's on pages 4 and 5. So that's the exclusive on the Irish Daily Mirror, which is on pages 4 and 5, and the Mirror have it exclusively while it's on front, the front page of the Irish Daily Star. Haven't quite figured that one out yet. But the main story on the Irish Daily Mirror this morning, Comics Secret Ordeal, Al My Booze Hell. A comedian, Al Porter, has revealed how a warning from Gay Byrne helped him beat his battle with the booze. The stand-up, who has made a comeback following allegations of sexual misconduct, is now 3 years sober. At 30, Al said the iconic Late Late host told him he needed to look at his drinking after watching the funny man down pints on stage. Al says he's now teetotal, adding life is better for it. And it's interesting, there's been a couple of interviews with Al Porter and stories about Al Porter over the past couple of weeks. And it seems to be quite clear that Al Porter is sort of trying to ease himself back into the public consciousness and relaunch his career. We'll watch that one with interest. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. 086 60 25,000 for your texts or WhatsApps. 074 91 25,000 for your calls. 0035 374 91 25,000 if you're outside of the dialing area. 16 minutes past 9. Take a short break. Back after these. Let's go to our first guest on the show this morning. Kieran Sharp is the CEO of Fact. And any of us who have been in the cinema for years will know Fact from the, I think it's Federation Against Copyright Theft, if I'm correct. But we'll have seen Fact's ads in cinemas on these islands for years. And Kieran, we're here to talk about what are euphemistically known as dodgy boxes.
Yes, that is a term that covers a wide range of different boxes who basically do the same thing. They illegally allow you to access material from the internet, usually streaming these days. That's what they are.
Now, a lot of the time these are items that you can buy, and shall we euphemistically say, from a fellow you met in a pub or from a fellow who someone you know's met in a pub, and the transaction can be done and you pay whatever you pay, a sum of money, and you get this box, you connect it to your TV at home, and it basically acts as, and I'm not hugely into all these terms, but it sort of does the same thing as a VPN. It circumvents the blocks on streams, and you can access things like Netflix shows and Amazon and Sky or Next or whatever, and you can watch them without paying the correct subscription.
That's right. Yes, it's illegally accessing sports content, TV shows, movies, anything you want to watch, as you say, usually for a small fee, and it's depriving the legitimate providers of the subscription fees.
Is there a way that the use of these can be tracked down? Is there any way of monitoring where there may be such a box and where streams are going illegally?
There's lots of different things that can be done technically, but often we work through other investigations to find the people responsible for selling or moving on these types of boxes and the services that they provide. So that's our main focus, really, is those who are providing the illegal services. They're criminals who are committing crimes giving people something that is essentially dodgy in itself in terms of the possibility of malware and viruses and inappropriate content and so on and so on and so on, which is a very real possibility as well.
Obviously, the rise in streaming and the rise in online services and web services and broadband and Wi-Fi and so on has changed everything. I mean, I'm of an age where I well remember buying my 12-inch vinyl album and the inner sleeve had a big skull and crossbones with the legend, home taping is killing music and it's illegal. And as I said in my intro, I well remember going to cinemas and, there was lots of warnings against recording using cameras in the cinema and so on. But given what's now available in terms of technology, it's now become a lot more sophisticated, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. So the use of the streaming services, such as originally by BBC iPlayer, have made it the fact that consumers can access what they want, when they want, and where they want to see all their favourite shows and programmes, which is a great thing. But of course, then it also creates an opportunity for criminals to try and take advantage of that as well.
Do you count, I beg your pardon, sorry, in terms of the use of these boxes, one of the things that's really become sort of prevalent in recent times, as I understand it, is sport, and people are accessing Premiership games, Formula One races and so on, things that would normally be shown under subscription, be it on Sky, be it on BT Sports, be it on whatever.
Yes. Yeah, sport is really, I suppose, the Premier League in the main, I think, was what kick-started all this. Because once you access, or you go to sort of provider to get access to all these sports, of course, you then get access to all the other things as well. So the movies and the TV shows that I've already mentioned. So sport, yes, it is a problem in that it's such a thing that's in demand by consumers. But of course, then that creates more problems for the pay TV providers, such as Sky, because then all their other content is accessed at the same time.
You mentioned the BBC iPlayer there. Now, another thing I'm aware of is a thing called VPN, where you can put something onto your computer or your laptop that makes it effectively think it's in a different country or act as though it's in a different country, and therefore you can access things like BBC iPlayer even though you're not necessarily, because here in Donegal, obviously, even though we're 16 minutes drive from the UK, geopolitically speaking, we cannot in Donegal access the iPlayer, even though our neighbours in Derry or Strabane, just a short hop up the road, can do. Would you be including the use of those kind of VPN programmes or something similar in this particular drive?
Yes, definitely. What we've been doing at the moment has been, as I say, going after the providers of services and the boxes that go with that. But of course, all our investigations involve whatever means people use to access this illegal content, and VPNs in particular are an issue when you go to different countries, different geographical locations. And so, yes, those things are always part of our investigations.
There's a caller asking, who produces the equipment that allows this to happen? Surely those companies and the providers of that equipment are the main players who should be targeted, not necessarily the consumer who's actually using it.
Well, we're not chasing down the consumer at the moment. Clearly, we want the consumer to, they're film fans or sports fans or whatever it might be. I mean, we want them to take on the legitimate content, enjoy it in the best possible circumstances. But the people we are chasing are those, as I've already said, who are providing these opportunities. But the boxes themselves, they're not illegal. They are perfectly legitimate. They can be used for various things. For instance, you could load up your holiday videos and photos on there or whatever. It's when they've been modified, and that most of them are constructed to be easily modified. They come from the Far East. And some of them come already modified from the Far East. So the manufacture of them in itself is not illegal. It's the modification that's the problem.
And there's also, I mean, a number of, as you say, legitimate and perfectly legal products that can be bought, one made by one of the major sort of streaming TV providers, actually, that can be modified and have a program added to it, which allows you to access stuff that's being streamed illegally. So the equipment itself isn't. And I'm talking about the Amazon Fire Stick. And I'm aware the Amazon Fire Stick is an absolutely legitimate piece of equipment that is used legitimately and properly by many, many people. But it is possible to get, as I understand it, a program onto a Fire Stick which allows you circumvent, in a lot of cases, the actual streaming rules.
Yes. So what you normally get is the people who provide the sort of illegal services we've already discussed, they will provide you with an already modified Amazon Fire Stick. It's another form of IPTV, Internet Protocol Television. It's just another form of that. And if they can crack the code that protects the Fire Stick, then that's what happens. You're then given that Fire Stick to use. Obviously, all of the companies who produce these are doing everything they can to keep changing the codes and stop it being modified. But it's very difficult. They're difficult technical solutions. And there are people who will continue to try and find a way to beat those technical solutions and provide you with illegal services through a Fire Stick.
Fact has traditionally tried to appeal to people's better natures and appeal to their sense of morality and point out that effectively, if you are accessing services for which you haven't paid, then that is a form of theft. And you've always sort of taken that, as I've sort of seen the advertising and so on, you know, and it appeared on Simon Bates did one for years, as I recall, on videos. And again, I'm showing my age on that one very much, I suspect. But in terms of Fact's approach, it's always been to try to appeal to people's better nature. Will you get to a point where FACT will actually say, OK, we're going to start. We've used the carrot, and we've used the carrot an awful lot. Now it's time to get the stick out, and maybe it is time to target consumers.
Well, it is a subject that's been under discussion, clearly. We know that as we do our investigations, we're going to see consumers getting swept up in those investigations. But we don't really want to be going after people and prosecuting those who are our consumers. We really want them to be able to be warned, take a warning, and we've done that on many occasions with letters sent to customer databases of people we've arrested who have been providing illegal services. Take the warning, understand that what you're doing is illegal, and that there could be consequences. But in general, as you can imagine, we would much rather that people understood the problem and enjoyed the premium content in its best guise.
Kieran Sharp, CEO of FACT, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
Kieran, thank you. That's Kieran there, who is the CEO of FACT, the Federation Against Copyright Theft. And we'll be seeing more and more, I think, on that, a crackdown on dodgy boxes. And let's be honest, there's been various, over the years, in Donegal and elsewhere, there's been loads of conversations about the accessing of TV and, you know, be it through microwave. And you remember way back in the days of MMDA and MMDA, jeepers, no, MMDA is something completely different. MMDS, you may recall. And it became an election issue back in the mid-1990s, which was an interesting time to be working in this job, as I was. Now, let's look at our quiz for this week, because Fit 20 have a giveaway, and it's running all this week on the 9 till noon show from today until Friday the 8th. We're giving you the chance to win 3 months membership to Fit 20. You can get stronger in just 20 minutes, train once a week with a personal trainer in a climate-controlled gym, answer a simple question each day. A winner will be selected daily to be entered into the draw on Friday. And to be in with a chance, we just want you to simply answer this question. And the question is, who won the Women's World Cup this year? Was it A, Spain, or B, Ireland? Who won the Women's World Cup this year? Was it A, Spain, or B, Ireland? Text your answer or WhatsApp it to 086 60 25000, including, please, your name and address. You will, if drawn, be a qualifier. And then at the end of the week, we will give you the chance to win that free 3 months membership. So that's what we're giving away, a 3 months membership to Fit 20. You can win that by entering the competition. Qualifiers each day going into the final draw on Friday. And the question is, who won the Women's World Cup this year? Was it A, Spain, or B, Ireland? This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Just a few of your comments that have come in. Long live the dodgy box, says a caller. It's the only TV I have, as the mainstream TV is rubbish. Another caller says, people have these boxes because the satellite services are so expensive. He speaks about crime. The way companies up their prices and get people hooked is crazy. Can someone just back the people once? So asks a caller. Now, let's go to Paula Leonard, who is the CEO of Alcohol Forum Ireland, because September is Recovery Month. It's a month during which there are celebrations. And Paula joins us. Paula, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Paula, very often when you come on, inevitably you're here to talk about problems and you're here to talk about issues. But today we're here to focus on success and we're here to focus on something positive.
Absolutely. I think it's really important. You know, the number of people who are seeking support through addiction services across the country has gone up significantly. Now, some people may see that as, you know, an indication of something that we need to be concerned about. And yes, you know, you can look at it that way. But it also means that more and more people are taking a really brave and courageous step to say, alcohol and other drugs are really harming my life. They're harming the lives of, you know, the people around me that I love, my family members, my children. And I'm going to do the really hard work and navigate recovery. And we're seeing more and more people in recovery. But unfortunately, there's still quite a bit of stigma and silence around that. So Recovery Month, really, every September, it's a way of doing two things. It's a way of making visible and celebrating and acknowledging the contribution that people in recovery are making in this country every day, you know, just about seeing them and hearing their voices. But it's also then, on the other hand, it's about remembering, you know, the people who didn't make it. So by the time you and I go to bed tonight, there'll be three more people dead in this country as a direct result of alcohol harm. So So it's also a space for those families who have lost loved ones from alcohol or other drugs to remember them, and to remember the challenges and to remember those who did aim for recovery and didn't make it. So I suppose it's both celebratory and a remembering. And, you know, what we've seen across the country over the last number of years is a huge increase in activity around making visible and celebrating recovery. And this year, Alcohol Forum Ireland, who traditionally we've been sort of service delivery oriented, we're making a big call out to people and saying, look, come and join us. We're joining the Recovery Walk in Northern Ireland, which takes place in Derry on the 30th of September, Saturday morning early. We'll walk the two bridges in Derry and come together in a celebratory way then down in Guildhall Square after the walk is finished. And it's just be tea, coffee, chats, making and building community, making and building visibility. And it'll be great fun. So if you have a pair of runners, you don't need to be in recovery, but you can be. We are calling, you know, people in recovery to build a visible, vibrant recovery movement here in the county. But for family members, for friends, for organisations who care about this issue and want to contribute and become part of the movement, join us. We're going to have a wee bus leaving, depending on the number of people who volunteers, leaving Letterkenny at around 9 o'clock on Saturday the 30th, travelling into Derry to join, you know, our colleagues and our friends who are running that event.
One of the key words you used there in that opening piece was because, as I understand it, one of the keys to recovery is it's got to come from the person themselves. You can be told you have a problem by everyone around you. You can be urged, you can be cajoled, you can be asked. But the real recovery starts when the person says, I have a problem, I need help, I need to tackle this.
Yeah, I think, look, I hear what you're saying, and I acknowledge what you're saying, and it is it's a very strong narrative, is this notion that it's, you know, that people have to decide for themselves and that, you know, there's nothing we can do. There's sort of a little bit of nihilism around people who are in active addiction. What we do know, for example, we run an impact programme. We've run two of them here in Donegal already this year. We'll run another one before year end. And families, so family members, children, you know, an adult spouse often can come to this programme with the person who is, you know, in active addiction or in recovery or in treatment. It's a unique program in that you don't have to actually be in recovery or in treatment to come to the program and attend the program. You just have to be sober on the night of the program. And what we find with that is, you know, family members come and they talk about it, and that can actually motivate that person to move towards recovery and to make changes, positive changes in their lives. We also run a family support service. We run five-step family support, and we have a new family support worker who starts just in July, Tom. And anyone who's out there can contact him at tom@alcoholforum.org. And that work, too, is about working with family members. One, they have a right to recovery in their own right. So addiction is damaging the whole family, and they have a right to sort of look for support in their own right and make their own journey. And those people, often around the drinker, around the person who's abusing drugs, they can make really positive changes that support that person to move towards recovery. We also see in, you know, hospital services, there's often this sort of nihilism again about what they call frequent flyers. So people who are in active addiction who come through hospital services, addiction services, mental health services repeatedly. And there's sort of this notion that, well, until they decide for themselves, there's nothing we can do for them. And that actually, in research terms and in evidence terms, that proves not to be the case. There are things that services can do, you know, a helping conversation, somebody coming out to visit you at home after you've been released from hospital, that assertive outreach, all of those things can make a significant difference. People in addiction can often feel really, really alone, and they can often feel that they have to do all of the heavy lifting and everything on their own. And we're now beginning to build up an understanding that that's not necessarily true. You don't have to do it all on your own. Yes, it's going to be a long, tough journey, and navigating recovery is complex, but there are lots of supports that are out there. There's lots of services that are out there. There are programs for family members. There's programs for families, including children, which we run ourselves. So, you know, it's not as isolating, and it's not as, you know, the other thing I think we have to challenge is the rock bottom narrative. So in Donegal, in particular, and across Ireland, people tend not to go for help until they really hit rock bottom. You can go for help at any point in the journey once you realise that alcohol or other drugs are having a negative impact on you, on your work life, your family life, your social life, you know, your health. You can go for help at any point in that journey once you make that realisation that, you know, hang on a minute, my alcohol intake or my, you know, use of other drugs, it's impacting negatively on my life and there's something I need to do about this. You don't have to wait until you hit rock bottom. You know, that sort of story that we read about and see in the movies and all of those things. It doesn't have to be that way. I suppose, Donal, I think that's an important message I'd like people to hear today.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You made the point that the recovery walk is taking place in Derry on the 30th, but you're hoping that maybe in 2024 you won't be having to get a bus into Derry because we're going to have one in Donegal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, baby steps. I suppose the big journeys all start with baby steps. There's great things happening in the recovery space in Derry. You know, you have ARC Recovery and you have Derry Healthy Cities and you have other organisations who have been working on this for a couple of years. We've been working with them on a cross-border basis this year. We're really excited to be learning from them and to be helped by them. And I suppose I'm new enough to the post of CEO, and building a recovery movement and supporting recovery is something that is very high on our agenda, and it's part of our new strategic plan. And next year we will be doing recovery walks and recovery events in Donegal throughout September. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. But this year we're going to travel in and join people in Northern Ireland, which, as you were saying earlier on the programme, is only a 16-minute drive for people from here. So,
caller says, and this is a point actually that, you know, does bear consideration. Caller says, unfortunately, we can talk until we're blue in the face about alcohol and addiction in general, but there is very little help available, and the process to access help in this country is at times a complete joke. And we're told there is a dearth of services in Donegal in terms of those who are seeking help. From that point of view, how would you respond to that, Paul? I mean, I presume we do need more services, particularly in areas like Donegal.
Yeah, look, you know, we had the county alcohol profiles were published just earlier in the summer by the Health Research Board, you know, and that did show some things that we need to be concerned about and pay attention to in Donegal. You know, we had a higher than average number of people seeking help from addiction services. But I think it's really important, and this is really, I suppose, for the HSE to answer rather than myself, but I am absolutely happy to promote their services. The Addiction Community Alcohol and Other Drug Service by the HSE in Donegal is an excellent service. They have outreach clinics, you know, in south of the county. They have the service in Letterkenny. They have services up in Inishowen. They do assessments within 2 weeks of receiving a referral. They see people, you know, in a very quick turnaround time. They try and keep their waiting list to a minimum. You know, so if somebody is having difficulties with their alcohol or other drug use in Donegal, they need to just go to the GP and have a conversation and look for a referral into that service. So that service is completely free at the point of delivery. We have residential treatment in Donegal and White Oaks. We have family programs that we run ourselves. We have family support. The Northwest Regional Drug and Alcohol Task Force, I'm on my way down to Ballyshannon this morning to meet some of them. They have outreach and family support in the south of the county. So I think there are the services and supports that exist, and I think they're excellent supports and services and run brilliantly in Donegal. There is also a lack of awareness that those services exist, where they are, how you access them, and how you can move, you know, on that journey, taking that first step towards treatment or towards recovery. So I think that, you know, all of us together who work in the sector, we have to promote those all of the time, communicate, use Highland Radio and local media, and get the message out there that help is out there, in fact. You know, so if people want to ring us in terms of the family support, if they want to ring the HSE Addiction Services, You know, all of those supports and services exist. And White Oaks as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important within this county that people know that we do have residential addiction treatment services.
And finally, Paula, so, in terms of making contact with yourselves, both in terms of seeking help or getting the right direction in which to go, and also in terms of registering an interest in going into Derry and maybe getting a place on that bus on September 30th, how can people contact you?
Well, Tom, our new family support worker, I'm out promoting his service and support. It's there since July. Just if they contact directly tom@alcoholforum.org in relation to the recovery walk, and in relation to anything else, they can contact myself on email at paula@alcoholforum.org. And we're happy to provide support and advice. We're happy to meet with people. We're happy to hold people's hands, you know, and help them on that journey, you know, either through our own services and supports or through services and supports from other community voluntary organisations and the HSE.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
12 minutes to 10, this is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. If you were listening at the start of the programme during our look at the newspapers at the top of the show, we referenced that story in the Irish Independent this morning that pupils in rural areas are more likely to be in primary school classes of 30 or more. And in Donegal, it's the third highest proportion in the country. The national figure is 11.4% of primary school pupils are in classes of 30 or more. If you move into the rural counties, Leitrim, that figure is the highest in the country, 18.6. Monaghan, it's 17.2. And in Donegal, the figure is 16.5. John Boyle, a native of this fair county, is the chief executive of the INTO. John, a very good morning to you. John joins us on Zoom. John, hello.
Hello, Don. Good morning to you.
And a very good morning to you as well. John, in terms of the, I said Chief Executive, General Secretary is the correct title. I do beg your pardon, John. John, in terms of those figures published by the Independent this morning, no surprise, I'm sure, to yourself.
No, Don. And the gas thing about it is quite complicated, this class size scenario, you know, because every year the department publishes what they call a staffing schedule. And that indicates to you how many teachers the school gets based on the 30th of September figure the year before. So I want to just take the listeners back a little bit to 2012 when I was on the show. And back in 2012, the government slashed all of the small schools in rural Ireland. For example, I was really angry at the time because my own former school in Annagrain and all those schools were very, very badly hit by government cuts. And what happened at that particular time was that if you had 84 children in 2011, you had your fourth teacher, and that was favourable. That was 21 children per class on average, and that was merited because it's not simple in rural Ireland. You have multi-classes. You'd have junior and senior infants in the one classroom, fifth and sixth in the other, so that's more challenging for the children and for the parents and the teacher. So the 21-to-1 ratio, which was, you know, in line with the rest of Europe back in 2011 for the smaller schools. At that time, the bigger schools had over 30 children in the class. But the government slashed the schools and you lost your fourth teacher. And that brought you to a scenario where you had only three teachers for the 84 children, up to 28-to-1 in the class, basically increasing the class size by a third. So that happened back in 2012. And that's not really washed out yet through the system, even though in the last couple of years, we have been successful with our pre-budget campaigns, getting reductions of one child per class for the last 3 years. But it's too little and too late. This government probably only has one more budget left on the 10th of October. And our demand this year, on behalf of all the children of Ireland and the parents, as well as the teachers, is that we get it down by two children. Now, the impact of that would be across the whole country. It would be, you know, significant because it would help us get close to the European average. But I don't think it's any coincidence that areas like Donegal and Leitrim, where a lot of the new Irish and particularly the Ukrainian children have been settled over the last 12 months, that the class sizes there are particularly large at the moment. So it's a major, major concern at the start of a school year. And it means government are really going to have to step up the pace with class size reductions.
Do you believe that the fact that the figures are based on 30th of September the year before is now unrealistic, given the movement we've seen in terms of bringing in those from Ukraine and from elsewhere, and the way those people are being distributed across the country and being given the education that they need and deserve, that if you're basing your figures on September 30th the previous year, you're utterly failing to take into account what's happened in the intervening 11 months?
Well, not necessarily, Donald, because I suppose, to be fair to the department now, when the war broke out in Ukraine, we certainly identified that certain schools who had maybe spare classrooms and that would have capacity. And we dealt with the department last March. And the one big ask we had of the department was, if a school takes in, say, 30 more children in the middle of the year, please don't force them to hold on until the following September before they get their teacher. Don't just base it on the previous 30 September figures. Give them the teacher. If they take the 30 children, give them an extra teacher right away. And to be fair, that did happen. But in terms of the figures that are there today, it's very, very clear that at least 1 in 9 of the children in Ireland is in a supersized class. And I suppose when you look at the rest of Europe, the average is 20. But we have countries that are way less well off than us within the European Union who have classes of much less than 20. And with 56.5 billion euros of a government surplus being predicted for the next 3 years, we just have a simple ask. Will you give us 41 million to keep the teachers in the schools that you're going to take away? Because if we don't get class size down in this budget by 2, the government is actually going to be taking back teachers, because the total population in schools is now coming in at about 50 to 53,000 coming in junior infants. But back 8 years ago, 9 years ago, when they did those cuts, there was way more children coming in. So with 80,000 kids going out in sixth class and only 53 coming in junior infants, if the government keeps the teachers, and they're saying that's going to cost us 41 million, it's not going to cost 41 million extra. It's just going to mean that the 41 million they're spending on those teachers right now will be retained for next year. And by the time you'd ring me this time next year, you'd notice that the impact of the class size reductions that are happening now today, because it's down by 1 from the 1st of September, and then another 2 for next year, you'd notice that the Donegal figures would be considerably reduced, and we'd be on the right trajectory towards the European average. And my view is, why would an Irish child not have the same opportunity in primary education to get a good start as a child in any other part of Europe? After all, the world is our oyster now. We're competing with all these for work throughout the world. You have different employers trying to attract the best. And if Irish children don't get the right start in life. So I hope all the listeners are emailing their TDs and back in our campaign to get class size. I must give a big shout out, Donald, to Frank McGlynn, who's a principal there outside Letterkenny, former all-star and inter-county player for Donegal. He is part of our pre-budget campaign. We did a video with a lot of Gaelic football stars asking for these improvements to the education budget. And Frank made a particular case for extra supports for school leadership in schools. So I just want to thank him very much for that input.
Are you looking, when you speak about retaining those teachers that are at risk of being lost, are you speaking about just maintaining the status quo and keeping those in the schools they're based in and making no change at all? Or are you looking at maybe redistributing some teachers to areas where perhaps there are bigger class sizes and in some way keeping the teachers but not necessarily in the same place, that you would spread them around to make sure you get a more even spread of class size ratios?
Yeah, so let's say next year now, if we got our way in the budget campaign, and rather than the class size schedule being at 23, if we got it down to 21, the impact of that would mean that in Donegal and Monaghan and Leitrim and places like that, that instead of losing a teacher, and the awful thing that happened with the cuts 10 years ago, that they would have less teachers for the remaining children, they would keep their teacher. And in keeping their teacher, with a wee small drop in the pupil population in the school, because there's more children going out in sixth than what's coming in junior infants, by keeping the teacher, automatically their class size average would fall. And if that were to happen over a number of years, you'd suddenly find that instead of having these supersized over 30 children in classes in County Donegal, you'd end up that it would be down around 25, 24, 23, which still above the European average, but it'd be definitely moving in the right direction. So all I'm trying to say here is budget ask, reduce it by two. It's only going to cost you 41 million if you were looking upon this as an extra cost. But in my view, they shouldn't be looking at education as a cost. This would be a major, major fillip for the next generation of children. If with a new curriculum coming in as well, Donal, there's a brand new curriculum. The maths has been announced tomorrow, and it's based on 20-1. So how can you deliver a curriculum for this modern era if you have 30 children in a class, if the actual curriculum is designed for 20? So it'd be a win-win for everybody if we got it down to the 20.
John Boyle, General Secretary of the INTO, thank you indeed for joining us this morning.